still hurting. I can't turn the other cheek.
Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KVU program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guests are James Anderson, author of the new novel Lullaby Road, and actor and activist Cosme Skywalker Duarte. James is a native of the Pacific Northwest, born in Seattle, raised in Portland, and a graduate of Reed College. He founded Brighton Bush Books, a publishing company based in Portland, and ran it from 1976 to 1991. This is James's third appearance on Between the Covers. Back in June 2015, we talked to him about his first novel, The Never Open Desert Diner, which introduced the character of Ben Jones, no relation, a half-Jewish, half-Native American truck driver in the high desert of central Utah. The book was initially published by Caravelle Books, then picked up and published in a new edition by Crown Publishing. And now James just came out with a second novel, again featuring Ben Jones and published by Crown, and that's Lullaby Road. In the words of Tama Janowitz, this guy writes like the offspring of a devil who married an angel. James joins us in the KVU studios today to talk about Lullaby Road, which marks the second chapter in the saga of Ben Jones. And we're also fortunate to have actor and activist Cosme Skywalker Duarte, who plays Ben, in the book's trailer. James Anderson, it's a great pleasure to have you back at KVU, and Cosme, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ken. It's great to be at KVU.
Thank you, Ken. Good to meet you.
James, let's start with you. I mentioned in the intro a little background on your first novel, The Never Open Desert Diner, how you came to write it, and the publishing history from Caravelle Books to Crown Publishers. Could you talk a little about this amazing publishing story?
It is amazing, and I still have moments where I'm stunned. I ask myself, did this really happen? It has to do with the nature of what I do, which is my books don't fall into any category. They're cross genre. They're not noir. They're not nonfiction. They're not romance. They're not actually mystery. They're sort of, as a number of reviewers and individuals have said, they're sort of everything. Every major publisher that would read any of it said no. In fact, a few of them said hell no.
And there were 20 publishers that said hell no or no in some form or other.
Because they just didn't know what it was. It didn't fit anywhere. And I tried agents, and no agents wanted me. And then I got picked up by a smaller publisher in New York, Caravelle. And that publisher, Jack Estes, said in a radio interview that he did that all the reasons why other people didn't publish it is what he loved about it. And so he picked it up. And then the critical response nationally and internationally was so amazing that I had an agent in New York contact me, and then subsequently it was picked up by Crown, which is a division of Random House. So all of it, really, these sorts of things do occasionally happen, but it's very, very rarely.
Well, it's certainly a book worthy of all the attention, the criticism, and the readership right now. So that brings us to the second book, Lullaby Road, and that continues the saga of Ben Jones, our Utah truck driver. It got a prestigious starred review in the Library Journal, and I'm quoting here from that review, "Fans of Anderson's first installment of this series will devour this book and long for another visit with the residents along Route 117, the road he drives in Utah." And I'm certainly among those fans, James, as you know. What gave you the idea to bring Ben back and bring back his friends and the Utah setting and Lullaby Road?
Well, I'd love to give you a deep, heartfelt, artistic response to that. But the fact is that Crown offered to pay me.
You had no idea. I mean, you had no idea bringing it back when you wrote
I actually did. But of course, it was so difficult the first time around, and that the idea of whether I would get anybody who wanted to publish a second book was so far and outside. But yes, I did think about it. I was thinking about it because I always thought of it not as a trilogy, but for me, what I call a triptych. So it's a panorama in sections, and I see it. I think unlike a lot of novelists, I tend to work more as a poet, and I work in terms of images, and then I explore those images. I enter it in the way that I enter that world. So even though Never Open Desert Diner was a huge critical success, I mean, it wasn't a bestseller. So they wanted me to write this one, and it's one that I'd been thinking about. But it had to be able to be read alone without having read the first one. And then hopefully if somebody is new to my work, they'll go back and read the first one, because it is a richer experience having read the first book at some point. But it's not absolutely necessary. And I do hope that if this second book is successful enough, Crown will want me to write a second or third. I know I'm going to write the third book. Whether it gets published, who knows? We don't know these things.
Well, I think the readership will demand it. And I think that readership increases with each book. You brought with you today a Cosme Skywalker Duarte. And Cosme, you are an actor and an activist, and you play Ben Jones in the book's trailer. So I want to thank you very much for coming in. I know you came in from Colorado yesterday, and you're heading down to Ashland for the book's official publication at an event there.
Bloomsbury Books, yes.
In Ashland. I should mention, when I said the book's trailer, the word trailer, I don't think really does it justice. It's a little over 5 minutes, and it's like a mini movie. I mean, it's so well done. And Cosme, like Ben, you're Native American, but I'm guessing not the Jewish part there. Half Jewish, half Native American.
You know, thanks for having me, by the way. First of all, I just want to say it's a great honor to be just even attached to this whole project. For me, I'm not an actor, you know, who goes back with, you know, schooling and all that kind of stuff. Everything's been rather miraculous for me. And the fact that I ended up with this spot working with James is just another miracle in my story, I guess you could say. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you, James and Ken. When it goes down to the character of Ben, we have a lot of similarities. Ben's the same age as me. James describes him as being a few inches taller than me, which kind of hurts, but, you know, it's okay. It was really funny when we were filming the film, I was talking with James out there, and there was some decorations that were going up in some of the end of the truck.
Oh, there was a Jewish star.
Yeah,
I noticed.
Then there was the dream catcher as well. Right. And I literally had taken I've always known I was Native American, obviously. I just didn't know what I was other than that. So I'd taken a DNA test and found out that I actually am part Jewish on my father's side. So
Wow. When
I saw that, I mentioned that to James.
For the part.
It was just really kind of strange in a lot of ways. And, you know, reading the going through the stories and learning about the character of Ben Jones, I did see a lot of myself in that character, but I also saw Ben for who he is. So I didn't try to attach myself to him in that sense. I tried to, you know, read the story and look at Ben for who he was. And it's just, I'm in awe over the stories. You know, they're just, it's amazing. The descriptions, everything that that takes place in them is just beyond me in many ways. So I'm just very thankful to be here.
And you mentioned your experience as an actor. You said you weren't classically trained, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have been in several features recently, right?
Yeah.
I looked online and...
My acting career literally started 2 years ago next month. You know, I've spent my life knocking down buildings. I'm a professional demolition expert by trade, and was picked out of the crowd one day to play Chief Red Cloud. And I don't know if you're familiar with the novel Black Elk Speaks, the story.
Oh, certainly, yes.
So they did the second or third time, I believe, the play has ever been attempted, and they decided to do it in Denver. And the producer saw me and just followed me around until I literally turned around and was like, hey, why are you following me kind of thing. And he explained to me what was going on, and I didn't believe him. And 6 months later, I got a script out of nowhere. And so things have really taken off for me. So I've been honored to have gotten as far as I have. I've been a part of a great TV show called Longmire as an official cast member. Just in season 6, I'm on a TV show tonight, actually, called The Brave, NBC.
Oh, I saw that on your Facebook page.
Yeah, some background
and
stuff.
And you're in a movie that was released recently or will be released very
soon. It's called A Woman Walks Ahead.
Oh, no, The Red...
The Red Hogan is...
The Red Hogan.
Yes, uh-huh. That's an independent film that I actually spent more than a few weeks living on the Navajo Reservation down in Shiprock. There's a very, very bright, talented young man down there named Cody Daish, who's an up-and-coming film director himself. And we worked together on that, and I did play the lead role in that film. I just don't have an idea when it's coming out.
Oh, okay, so it's not released
yet. It's not released just yet. Uh-huh. But I do have some small parts in some other movies that that are kind of floating around out there, too. So some small stuff for now, but, you know, it's picking up. So.
And I mentioned you have a background and certainly a big interest as an activist, political activist, and you were at Standing Rock as a water protector and, of course, protesting the Dakota Pipeline there.
Yeah, well... you know, my purpose for going there, I understand what the reason for the camp was, for, you know, to protect the water and all that kind of stuff. But my reason for going there was for human rights. The way that the system was behaving towards people in general over there was unacceptable for me as an American. So I decided to go out there to protect people more than, you know, than just standing up for the water. The first time I went out there with my daughters, with my mom, we happened to be there the very first day that violence was used on the protesters.
Was that rubber bullets?
Dogs was the first day, yeah. So I was lucky that my daughters weren't affected by that too much. But the second time I went out there was with a group of veterans, and we went out there to protect the water protectors. So my missions there were a little bit different than everybody else's, but the activist part, I mean, it's just what we all should do. You know, I don't really consider it to be kind of anything special, I guess, you know, and in some senses, it's just, you know, human nature. We're all supposed to help each other out, so.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, we're talking with James Anderson, author of the new novel Lullaby Road, and actor and activist Cosme Skywalker Duarte. Now, James, back to you and Lullaby Road, we talked about the genre typing. It's called a mystery, but it's not necessarily a mystery. There's elements of that, and you mentioned a few other elements, the noir part and things like that. But let's get to the part of noir literature, because you had an interesting quote about that. And this includes the mystery novels of Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, James Crumley, to name a few. Usually they take place in big cities.
Mm-hmm.
That's the noir part, and usually at night, you know, dark. Uh-huh. But you have Ben Jones here in the Utah desert. In the first book, it was late spring, early summer. In this book, it's winter. But still, there's a lot of light. It's a glaring light. And you often work with that paradox. And I know I've talked with you before. You enjoy subverting these literary rules. So I was wondering, is that something that went into your decision to set the books in the Utah desert?
Yes. I have to resist the impulse to use hindsight, you know, to say now that I had all these lofty plans and ideas.
Yes.
And yeah, I was so well planned out, and I thought it through, and I'd just be lying to you if I said that. I've said before, I think to you in conversation, that noir literature, at least to me, is about one person fighting for light in a dark world. And Ben is actually doing that. He's surrounded by light, but he's also surrounded by darkness, his own personal darkness, but also kind of the darkness of the tough life that so many people are leading. So when you get out into the desert, what I like about it and how I'm trying to make the narrative function in the story is, when you get out into the desert, what really matters comes to full view. There are few people, few resources, and so what often gets discussed is geopolitical. Mm-hmm. becomes just one person trying to help another person, because that's all that's there. It's just the two of you. And because there's no cell phone reception out there, there's no laptops, there's no, if you have something to say, you've got to say it straight to the person. And that's what I like about the world of Ben Jones. People who don't necessarily agree and don't like to be around people, step up. So in terms of Lullaby Road, we're talking about children are often discussed as a political issue, as refugees. So many children are disappearing from the border towns.
You've got DACA in the press now, the Dreamers, right, where the children of immigrants are in danger of being sent back to native countries.
And see, the thing is that these get discussed as political issues, which allows us, I'm going to say us, to be able to distance ourselves from what essentially is a humanitarian, a compassionate calling or involvement. You're out in the desert, there is a child, there are children, and you're it. What are you going to do? So I like the idea of reducing everything out to a beautiful but harsh environment with just a few people. Now let's see what you do. You don't have the government. It's not a political thing. It's not a red thing. It's not a blue thing. It's not an immigration thing. It's not a fear thing. This is you. What are you going to do for a child?
And that's, of course, Ben's plight in there, where he's an immigrant child is kind of forced on him early,
yes,
in the book, and the dog, and also the baby of his friend.
Right.
And traveling back and forth on Highway 117 like that. That quote about noir literature, you had mentioned it, of course, a light in a dark world, but the literature of the oppressed and the marginalized.
Yes.
I should say that a lot of the characters in the book, almost all of them, are broken in some sense. Very three-dimensional. I mean, there's good parts, but there's also some darkness to them. But mm-hmm. you also get into, as we see here, the issue of immigration. But on, as you mentioned, also an unpersonalized level. I'm not going to say the word that our president uttered the other day, but it's very much in the news now. And I mentioned DACA and the Dreamers,
mm-hmm.
but certainly a big part of the present administration is anti-immigration. And he ran on that platform, and it seemed to resonate with enough Americans to get him elected. Did that go into your objectives in the book at all, in Lullaby Road? It's much more evident here than it was in the Never Open Desert Diner.
Yes, I try to stay focused on the story and on the characters, and not use them to represent larger ideological or political issues. What people do, most of us, on a one-on-one situation is not what we get to do when, or what is allowed for us to do, which is to step back and say, well, my position on this is this. And as far as immigration is concerned, Ben doesn't really know that this child is, I have to use the word, an illegal immigrant. All Ben knows is that it's an Hispanic child that's been abandoned in the middle of winter at a CD truck stop in the desert. What are you going to do? There's so much divisiveness that couches compassion in terms of elevating fear and risk. Doing the compassionate thing always involves risk. Are you going to take that risk? Do you want somebody to take that risk for your child if you're not there? So these, I look upon these things as real life one-on-one issues. And the fact that it's sort of this book, which I actually started 3 years ago, plays out against this current backdrop, well, it just goes to show us that this has been with us for a long time, and in fact was with us when we accepted boats and boats and boats of orphaned Jewish children after World War II. We took them. Mm-hmm. So
it's unfortunately not getting much better or going away.
No, because it's still risk. But when you have leaders, because it's just not the president, but when you have them discuss this issue as if somehow we're all at risk by doing the compassionate thing, that dangerous, you know, that's just not, I don't think that's who we are. And even people who may support it at a distance, when it came right down to it, if they would open their door to a child, they would do it in a second.
And that's the situation facing Ben Jones in the book. Yes.
Yes.
And of course, the story proceeds from there.
Well, yes. And it turns out that Ben is taking on much more risk, but at no point, because there is jeopardy. There is jeopardy, life-threatening, in fact, that affects Ben and a lot of other people based on this decision. But at no point does Ben ever look back over his shoulder and say, I wish I hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. And part of that has to do with who Ben Jones is as a character. I personally cast Cosme in this film, and you know I'm looking at 50 actors, and I'm going through and I'm reading the stuff, and it was the finger on this one going, this guy.
Cosme's like, the perfect Ben Jones.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe he's not as tall as Ben Jones, and
here we go with that again.
You know, but the fact of the matter is that then I met Cosme, and you know, there are just qualities that you sense sometimes, and his performance in the short film. It started out that we wanted to do a book trailer, which are usually 45 seconds or a minute of quick cuts, stock footage, blah, blah, blah.
Right, for short attention spans. You might see them on Amazon.com.
Right. But, you know, we had a great director of photography, great cinematographer, Joe Baran, who's worked on all kinds of...
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, and it captures that. It was filmed on location.
Yeah, and Joe, I get up early. I usually write very early in the morning, so I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm wandering around looking for coffee at the hotel. And who do I run into but Joe Baran, who's got incredible feature film experience. He's amazing. And I run into Joe, and we're talking about how this was originally going to be just a short trailer, but I couldn't leave well enough alone. You know, I just didn't want that sort of quick cut sort of thing.
Well, so, you have a background as a filmmaker yourself.
Yes.
You've worked on documentaries. So.
And so I had a lot of people in the industry going, if you make something longer, nobody's going to watch it. Nobody cares. And, well, yeah, I care. So I'm talking to Joe Baran at 4 o'clock in the morning, who got up at 4 o'clock because there were certain shots of the light that he wanted to get. So casting call wasn't for another 2 hours, but Joe is up. And he said, the cinematographer that I learned from, said, had a saying, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. and so what happened was that it turned into a short film with a huge cast of characters, original music, plus the Leonard Cohen song, plus my old friend, Grammy Award winner Terrence Simeon sings on it. and being shot on location with, you know, a whole army of people, as Cosme remembers. And everybody felt so strongly, including the director, Kent Youngblood, who has all kinds of credits, that we wanted this to be worthwhile as a project, even if you never read the book, that it stood alone as a great piece of filmmaking, what we felt was a great piece of filmmaking. So what started out as a book trailer is a short film, and Kent is now taking it to festivals around the country.
That's great.
I'm trying not to make this a bigger thing than it is, but we use these words like diversity and so on. Forget the categories. Forget the words. What are we talking about here? We're really talking about nature and life and connection with all creatures. And so when you throw it all into a big stew, that's what happens. So I was afraid with the first book what was going to happen was that the people who are hardcore mystery suspense people were going to hate it, and that the people who were literary people who read literary novels were going to hate it. And miraculously, what happened is that both sides seemed to love it. And yeah, I have a couple moments for all those people who wrote me, publishers and agents, nasty letters about, you know, what the hell is this? You know, this doesn't fit anywhere. And, you know, you got to play by the rules. And yeah, I have these moments where I go, yeah, you know, bite me. I did what I wanted to do. And it turned out that readers responded to it.
Well, James Anderson and Cosme Skywalker Duarte, again, thank you both very much for coming into KBOO today.
I'm honored. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I am honored. Thank you so much, Ken.
We've been talking with James Anderson, author of the new novel Lullaby Road, and actor and activist Cosme Skywalker Duarte. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to James and Cosme for visiting us at KBOO, and to all of you for listening.
Even in your arms, I know I'll never get it right. Even when you're bent to give me comfort in the night, I've got to have your word on this or none of it is true. And all I've said just instead of coming